This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Glynis Board. Health officials in the state are concerned that people are becoming a bit too relaxed about the ongoing coronavirus pandemic, making outbreaks more likely. One of the state's top health officials has resigned. And if the state were to tighten restrictions, what might that mean for our friends in recovery?
Generally, I can talk to, you know, our little circle, like people that knew her without crying, but not too often.
This is West Virginia Morning. Commissioner for Public Health Dr. Kathy Slemp has resigned following public criticisms from Governor Jim Justice. Carol Lofton reports.
In his virtual press briefing Wednesday, Justice said officials recently discovered that some coronavirus case numbers were reported incorrectly. Justice used Huttonsville Prison as an example, saying while the total number of cases had dropped at the facility following an outbreak at the end of May, reporting from Randolph County had not taken the recoveries there into account, artificially boosting the state's active case numbers. Justice said he wasn't clear what happened, and officials didn't say whether other counties had similar inaccuracies. The governor said the data error was inaccurate on the good side for us, but expressed frustration at the finding.
And there's either a breakdown at the local level, there's a breakdown within our level.
4 hours later, the Justice Administration issued a press release saying Dr. Slemp had handed in her resignation. The press release said Justice told Department of Health and Human Resources Secretary Bill Crouch he lacked confidence in Dr. Slemp due to a series of recent events involving issues under her direct control. The press release offered few specifics, but in the earlier press conference, Justice did not mince words with his criticisms.
Here's the bottom line, and here's the whole thing to me. I mean, if we were on our game here in DHHR, in Dr. Slemp's office, if we're on our game and you're listening to the governor say that there's 6 active cases at Huttonsville, and you're looking at the reports that you're putting it together and sending them to me on active cases, and you're looking in Randolph County, they're reporting 100 and some odd cases, then you're not doing your job.
Slemp was on the job for just over a year. She started working for the Department of Health and Human Resources in 1994 as the founding director of the Division of Infectious Disease Epidemiology. She subsequently directed the state's emergency preparedness efforts and served as acting state health officer for the DHHR from 2002 to 2011. She left the DHHR in 2011 before returning in 2018. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Carol Lofton.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health and Charleston Area Medical Center. As economies gradually reopen around the Ohio Valley, state officials are still reporting hundreds of coronavirus cases each day. Kentucky, in particular, has seen a recent uptick in cases. Some health experts are concerned that cases are spreading into more rural communities, with outbreaks arising around a few types of large workplaces and facilities. Liam Niemeyer has more on the pandemic's rural hotspots.
Caitlin Blair says she's worried some state and local leaders aren't taking the pandemic seriously enough. Blair is the spokesperson for the United Food and Commercial Workers Local 227, a union representing meatpacking workers in multiple plants throughout Kentucky and southern Indiana.
The problem is, without a vaccine, there is no path to recovery. There's nothing normal about going to work and having to wear a mask.
Coronavirus cases are still rising by the dozens in these Kentucky plants, with more than 500 cases so far. And state officials confirmed earlier this month a third meatpacking worker with COVID-19 had died. It was at a Tyson Foods plant in Henderson County, where a labor leader earlier raised concerns about a lack of social distancing. And it's not just meatpacking workers at risk.
They go to work in a meatpacking plant, but when they go home, they're your neighbors and your friends and your family.
A data analysis from the Food and Environmental Reporting Network found that rural counties with meatpacking plants on average had COVID-19 cases 5 times higher than other rural counties. That includes 2 West Kentucky plants with hundreds of cases and 2 deaths between them.
The major driver of the cases that we've worked have been facilities in this sector.
That's Clay Horden, director of the Green River District Health Department that's been monitoring two West Kentucky meatpacking outbreaks. Horden also says while more data is needed, workers could be spreading cases to other people in rural communities. He says health officials and some companies like Purdue Farms haven't always seen eye to eye on coronavirus safety standards. For example, Purdue wanted to allow workers who didn't have a fever but still have a cough to come back to work, something Horden warned against.
They obviously had a different perspective on that. We did all that we could to try to persuade them to see that way.
Meatpacking plants aren't the only facilities driving COVID-19 outbreaks in rural communities. Prison and jails and nursing homes and long-term care facilities are also associated with outbreaks in rural regions. And regional health experts say it's critical to prevent farther virus spread in these facilities in order to protect rural communities. Belmont County, Ohio's Deputy Health Commissioner Robert Sproul says about 70% of the county's cases are connected to the prison located there.
It has dorm settings, so it's not individual cells. So these inmates are in close contact, most all day. So the chance of spread is great.
Belmont Correctional Institution saw cases spike in mid-May, with at least 66 staffers and 132 inmates testing positive out of the almost 2,500 housed there. Three of those inmates died. In West Virginia, where the overall number of cases has been low compared to the rest of the country, nursing homes have not been spared from outbreaks. West Virginia University Health Sciences Vice President Clay Marsh, who's been leading COVID-19 protection efforts in the state, says it's still critical to keep a close eye on these kind of facilities.
So I'm really worried that the second wave of COVID, as we come back open again, is going to hit rural America much harder than the first wave did.
Marsh also says one thing to watch is if recent protests will create new outbreaks in cities and rural communities alike. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Liam Niemeyer.
The Cabell-Huntington Health Department is alarmed by a spike in positive COVID-19 cases. In a press release yesterday evening, officials wrote that they've received reports of 10 new positive cases between Tuesday and Wednesday. The cases appear to be related to recent travel to South Carolina, Florida, and Tennessee, as well as community spread that is not related to travel. Officials are strongly recommending everyone adhere to the protocols and guidelines set forth by the Centers for Disease Control and West Virginia's Bureau for Public Health. Social distancing, limiting face-to-face contact, and even reviewing any plans for travel, family get-togethers, and gatherings like graduations and weddings. Because of the coronavirus pandemic, tens of millions of Americans have been at home for months. Nearly a quarter of the population has applied for unemployment, and calls to help centers and suicide hotlines are up in what some are calling a shadow pandemic. In the most recent episode of West Virginia Public Broadcasting's program, Us and Them, host Trey Kay speaks with West Virginians who've relied on mental health treatment only to have it interrupted by the pandemic. He learned that while social distancing can help prevent the spread of COVID-19, at the same time, it forces people away from life-saving connections. Here's an excerpt.
Relapse rates here are through the roof.
That's Andrea Reed. She's talking about what's happening now in West Virginia's Wyoming County. The most recent national numbers show, even before the pandemic, West Virginia had the highest rates of overdose deaths in the country.
It's kind of like the Wild West out here right now. We had 6 in one apartment complex 3 days ago with one fatality.
Reed founded the Wyoming County Recovery Network. It provides counseling and support to substance abusers. She's also a student in licensed clinical health social work and plans to become an addiction mental health counselor.
This is just something that I really wanted to have more of a hands-on approach to dealing with substance abuse, as opposed to doing a lot of the red tape and the bureaucracy of it. Especially with Amanda's death, it's kind of really pushed me to go on and do more.
It's hard for Andrea to talk about Amanda's death. That's her good friend, Amanda Belcher. Amanda died in March from a drug overdose. The two women met when they would lead 12-step and relapse prevention meetings. Amanda was a recovering opioid addict and a peer counselor. Andrea says they were close.
She was beautiful inside and out. A lot of people, when they are in active addiction, people will generally just see the stigma. They don't know the person that they were or that they could have been.
Andrea says her friend was doing well with recovery and was sober for 2 years. She was a mother and was engaged to be married. Then COVID-19 hit. Andrea says Amanda struggled with social distancing and lockdowns. She was isolated from those she tried to help. At first, Amanda continued to support others through Facebook. So I'm looking at a picture of Amanda, and it's a post on Facebook. And below, it's a news article that basically says that Wyoming County law enforcement report 14 overdoses in less than 2 weeks. And then she writes, "Listen to me, guys. You all don't have to live like this!" Exclamation point. "Please don't feel embarrassed or ashamed. It happens, but you can change it. Be the change the world needs right now. Do what's right and get help today. We're still here for you during this COVID-19 crisis. Call me so I can take you to detox or rehab. We do recover. We are here for you." And then she puts a telephone number. I can just, the look on your face, I can tell this is tough to talk about.
No, it's okay. My friends and I that know Amanda have kind of swore that her death would not be in vain, that we would use her story like she would have wanted to help as many people as we can from it. If one person gets help, then that's worth it.
Can you describe for me what you think her final day was like?
So Amanda had actually overdosed on heroin. Billy discovered her. Billy's her fiance. From what I understand, he had to beat the bathroom door down, and he worked on her. I think the kids had told him that she was still in the bathroom, and or like they heard a thud. And bless his heart, he has been really struggling with that. I'm sure with some PTSD, you know, finding your fiance in the floor, you know, someone that was in recovery and doing really well. And then having to do CPR on her would be horrible. I couldn't imagine.
I'm just letting that sink in. I'm sorry.
No, you're okay.
It's so upset.
Listen, this is the longest I have been not being able to cry. I mean, you know, not crying when I'm talking to somebody else about it. Generally, I can talk to, you know, our little circle, like people that knew her without crying, but not too often.
It's impossible to know exactly why Amanda overdosed. But based on conversations they had, Andrea knows the circumstances of the pandemic, the mandatory stay-at-home orders, had become lethal for Amanda. She may have felt overwhelmed by the isolation from the stay-at-home orders and the social distancing. Or, Andrea says, maybe it was boredom that pushed her friend to try heroin again. It's very easy to get in Wyoming County.
For Amanda's situation, the idle time, I think it gives you too much time to think, and you don't have the ability to just go speak to someone. Do you know what I mean? Like the social isolation portion of that in and of itself is enough, you know, especially when you are such a social person, and she was. I don't know that she received the mental health care that she really needed, the sustained mental health care. Amanda, the biggest part for her was to stay busy, going to work every day, doing crafts. Like she had kind of a side business where she was very crafty and did things like that. She was very open about the fact that she could not be a housewife because she needed that time away. She needed something to focus her mind on. And when the social isolation happened, I think that really affected her in a way that she was home. She started to get depressed. You know, she wasn't fulfilling her purpose.
This is an excerpt from the latest episode of our show, Us and Them, titled Forced Apart, A Shadow Pandemic. To hear the rest of the show, tune into West Virginia Public Broadcasting tonight at 8 p.m. There'll be an encore presentation of the episode this Saturday at 3 p.m. You can also download Us and Them wherever you get your podcasts or listen online at wvpublic.org. This episode of Us and Them is presented with support from the Claude Worthington Benedum Foundation and the West Virginia Humanities Council. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm your producer and host, Glynis Ford.